and welcome to Kick Arts with James, Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive arts show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Each week we bring you a variety of interviews and music from across the arts world, from theatre to books, events to exhibitions, we've got it covered. And tonight we are talking community theatre and venues with a studio of experts from across the greater Auckland region. Plus we're checking in with Emma at her dress rehearsal of Into the Woods, and we're chatting with author Kerry Harrison. Now, I have been running auditions for the Addams Family musical all weekend, and just because I haven't heard it enough this weekend, here is the fantastic Kerry Hope Fletcher with Pulled from the Addams Family.
I don't have a sunny disposition. I'm not known for being too amused. My demeanor's locked in one position. See my face, I'm enthused. Suddenly, however, I've been puzzled. Bunny rabbits make me want to cry. All my inhibitions have been muzzled. Being pulled in a new direction. And I think I like it. I think I like it. I'm being pulled in a new direction. Through my painful pursuit, somehow birdies took root. All the things I detested, impossibly cute. God, what do I do? Mother always said be kind to strangers, but she doesn't know what they destroy. I can feel the clear and present dangers when she learns that the boy's got me pulled in a new direction. And I think I like it. I think I like it. I'm being pulled. Droopy faces, unicorns with dancing mice, sunrise in wide open spaces, Disney World, I'll go there twice. Butterflies with picnic lunches, bunches of chrysanthemums, lollipops and pillow fights, and Christmas Eve, sugar plums, string quartets and chia pets, and afternoon banana splits, angels watching as I sleep, and never a day's greatest hits. Have got me pulled in a new direction. If they keep insisting, just watch me pulled in a new direction. I should stay in the dark and not obey every spark. But the boy has a bite better for than his bark. And you'll bet I'll bite too. Do what's truly taboo. As I pulled in a new direction.
Wonderful Kerry Hope Fletcher with Pulled from the Addams Family musical. Good evening, James.
Kia ora, Stephen. Good evening.
Good evening. You're in Emma's seat.
And I'm channeling my inner bush.
Channeling your inner bush. That's a bit dangerous.
Very.
You haven't got pink hair, though. That would have been the true way to channel your inner bush.
No. Maybe next time.
Yeah. Emma having a very rare night off from the show, working hard on Into the Woods, but we're going to catch up with her a little later on. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, good week.
Out in the teaching world?
Yeah, no. I'm sure every teacher knows that there's 15 days left of the school term.
not so that you're counting.
Not counting. But yeah, we're in the thick of it, really. Thick of the term, thick of the busyness. But no, it's good.
Nice. And from a performing arts side of things, schools are flat out at the moment. Lots of, we've got the Big Sing happening this week and at the Aotea Centre. There's been the bands, the choirs, everything. It's like June goes crazy for music.
Yeah.
Dance is sort of starting to slow down now. and it's the singing starting up.
Yeah, it's busy, and they're trying to get it out of the way before the exams and everything pile up. So, yeah, this is the time to be getting out there and supporting your school community.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent my weekend with auditions for the Addams Family musical. We've had the biggest turnout in Kids for Drama's history for auditions, which is fantastic. Lots of talent, but lots of surprises too.
Cool.
I love those moments where, you know, someone turns up and you think you know them, and then they just blow it out of the water with a song or acting or something that you just didn't know they had in them.
And one of the coolest things about auditions is when you see someone push themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes a lot of courage.
Absolutely.
To push themselves and take a real risk. And for someone who's young and, you know, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Although one of them did just text me saying, I can't believe you're still playing that song, because we have played it 200 times over the weekend. Now, we've got two fabulous people in the studio and a couple of people we're going to catch up with on the phone throughout tonight. We wanted to talk community venues and community theatre, but in particular, sort of the venue for hire space as well. So, big welcome to Horst, who is Vice President of Harlequin Theatre. Good evening.
Thank you, Stephen. Hello.
Great to have you here. And Andrew, who is the venue hire manager for Auckland Music Theatre. Welcome.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And you're both very busy people and have come from things today, so thank you. Horst, you're part of Into the Woods, is that right? Taking
Absolutely.
Place at Harlequin?
Yeah, I'm working with Emma, so I'm the co-production manager of Into the Woods at Harlequin, and I'm also have a very small part in it. We're running our tech rehearsal as we speak, and I had to sneak out about half an hour early to be here.
I think the boss would have let you. How many V's did she have today?
Stopped counting. Just still shaking.
And Andrew, you've been busy lighting up the world somewhere. Tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. This morning we started with Auckland Music Theatre's rehearsal of That Bloody Woman, starting to get the band involved and running the show in full, which is quite nice. Following from that, I went to Kew Theatre for Indian Ink Theatre Productions production of Paradise or The Impermanence of Ice Cream, which is still got another week there. It's been there for 2 weeks so far, great reviews and things, which is awesome. And I'm the lighting designer and production manager for that, so keeping busy.
So venue hire manager is one of the many things that you do, but lighting is your passion or your love?
Yep, absolutely. Design and theatre is definitely the core of what I love to do. Tend to do it more than I need to, but to try to make a living, as many of us in the industry do. But at the end of the day, it's something that makes my heart full, and it makes it full to see other people's hearts be fulfilled with emotion and lift their spirits up or take them on a journey through storyline.
And there's so many stories you can tell just with the lighting, right? Which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And if I could support it, through that journey, that's awesome.
That's cool. And your day job working for iTicket means, I guess, you're in touch with community theatre throughout New Zealand. We're, you know, talking about community theatre and venues tonight, but how is theatre going for New Zealand from an iTicket point of view? What are you seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. there's the famous C word that's been made its appearance over the last couple of years. And for the most part, New Zealand's theatre scene is actually quite robust and doing quite well. People, you know, there was a lot of unknown coming out of the restrictions and being able to put audiences back into our theatres and our local community theatres. Big shout out to all the societies out there who have, you know, went straight into it blazing. Mm-hmm. With that confidence of the promoters and the community groups putting this work on, audiences have come out and they have been supporting us, not just in numbers, but in terms of getting involved because their lives have slowed down a little bit, especially outside of the bigger cities. They're supporting us and keep on coming, which is great.
That's awesome. Now, Horst, tell us about Harlequin Theatre as a venue, I guess, and as an organisation that's operating in there.
Yeah, okay. So Harlequin Theatre was actually started off as the Howick Operatic Society in 1959. So we had a 60-year anniversary about 2 years ago. And in a number of different venues. And then in the late 70s, we got our first club rooms. and had an extension in the early 90s. So we are lucky enough to own our building. So the land is council land, but we own our building, and we do about three shows per year that we put on ourselves. And then we, to help run and pay for the running costs of the theatre, we also have some outside hires during the year. We're quite lucky to have like three, four mainstays of hires that come to us and book in quite early. And we try to work around with them on our shows and their shows because we have limited space. But yeah, it's been fun. I live 5 minutes from the theatre, so that's not too bad. But it also means, you know, if something needs to happen, you just go up quickly and do stuff.
That's cool. We'll unpack sort of the making of the venues and all of that and how they run. Andrew, just fill us in for people who don't know, where is Auckland Music Theatre?
Yeah, absolutely. Auckland Music Theatre has a building which they use for their own internal shows and rehearsals, as well as a venue hire platform. It was originally built in 1991. It's in Point Chev by MOTAT 2, the aviation building part of MOTAT.
It looks part of MOTAT too, like it's all themed with the building right next door, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The location is actually quite stunning.
Yeah.
You know, it's an old dump, which is quite ironic in a way that they've converted a dump into an arts and cultural historic precinct, if you will. At the end of the day, it's a good precinct of our community, and we're glad to be somewhere that's quite close to the CBD. You know, have things like parking, have things like the Miola Reef to walk around. Lots of cafes and things are popping up. So, it's definitely found its place in the community. And I know the trust and the committee are working quite hard to elevate its presence in the community even more so in the future.
Now, Horst mentioned how, you know, the balance of an in-house group versus hire. What's it like for AMT? How many sort of hires in your year versus what your group's putting on, or does that change?
Yeah, it's completely flexible. A lot of it depends on what Auckland Music Theatre's doing that year. If they're doing a joint venture or a bigger show, the Pro-Am sort of model shows, that usually takes a good chunk of our year in terms of the set being in the space or rehearsals and those type of things, which means that we're not able to really offer the space to other people because, as you can imagine with those civic sets and things, they take up a lot of space. But on a normal year, say we do 2 to 3 clubroom shows, it's probably about 70% venue hire and 30% show AMT use,
wow.
To be honest.
Right.
Part of that is because being a volunteer organization, most of the shows are only in the evenings that are being rehearsed and Sundays during the day, which means Monday through Friday and Saturdays during the day we're available for professional theater groups to use the hire the space. And we've been quite lucky over the years, especially with my contacts in the industry, to get, you know, everybody from ATC to Indianing Theatre to go into the space. And, yeah, we're quite packed nowadays.
It's quite a versatile space, isn't it, in the sense like the chairs can be pushed right back out. So you've got, because you just mentioned the big civic theatre sort of sets, and I've got visions of how does that fit into there. But everything opens up?
Yeah, 100%. So the Black Box, we have two spaces that we predominantly hire. There's the Black Box Theatre, which is where we usually hold the AMT shows. That's about 18 by 12 meters in size, which is quite nice. That also has the flexible rollout seating for 122 seats. So that keeps a lot of versatility in there. We also are starting to have like fringe work. So this year, for the first time, Fringe Festival actually did a show at our venue, which is quite nice. So we're starting to see that as more and more of these shows are, especially smaller shows, are looking for spaces because the city ones, the basements and those type of things are full. They're expanding a little bit more out, so that's awesome. And then we also have the workshop space, which was built with the intention of literally the sets for the Civic and Her Majesty's and things in the back in the 90s to be able to have it in there. So Rent, for example, when it was in the Civic, they did the full scaffolding set in that space. It's huge. It's got like, I don't know the exact height, but it's like 50 feet in height or more. It's about 22 by 16 metres.
Wow.
In terms of
that's
space.
A good space. Yeah.
Yeah, so awesome.
Oh, you just said Her Majesty's. That just took me back. His Majesty's. Can I ask both of you, what do you see as the biggest challenge today for running a venue? For a community theatre, running a venue, what's your biggest challenges?
Yeah, I think for us it's really just balancing the need of when we need a theatre and when we're going to hire it out. So we have one main space, which is our stage, which means if we do our own shows, we won't be able to hire it out mainly, you know, unless someone comes in. And I think for Into the Woods, we actually have the con artists coming in and doing a little show on our off nights. But else, we wouldn't be able to accommodate anyone to do stuff because we have to build a set there. So normally, we blacken out the days before the shows from about 5 to 6 weeks. So that gives us enough time to get up and build our set and get everything done. That's really the main challenge. And I think the ongoing costs usually is, you know, we can live with that. But last year was obviously a bit of a challenge when you don't have any higher income to help with that and no shows planned. So, but we got through it. So, yeah. But I think for us, it's the balance between hiring out and our own shows, really.
Andrew, for you, biggest challenge?
Yep, that's definitely, scheduling is definitely a big part of it, especially the fact that we're volunteer organizations. So finding that balance to really have somebody coordinate all the stakeholders that are using the space, and also having some consistency. You know, it's taken time for the committees, the trust, the venue hires, myself to sort of know sort of parameters around what the space can be used, where things can be, sharing space. I mean, that's a whole project in itself. You know, sustainability in general. I mean, West Point is owned by Auckland Musical Arts Trust, which is, you know, it's for lack of better words, the protecting entity of Auckland Music Theatre's assets. You know, constantly just looking at ways to make sure that we're not only sustainable but could also improve our building. Our building was built in 1991. It was not built to be a performance venue originally. It's literally a modified shed. So we're going through that process now of saying, okay, like, yes, we have high use. We're sort of sustainable. How can we now, use the space more efficiently to help improve it and you know, increase maintenance works on it, which is vitally needed.
I imagine it's a bit of a balancing act with your resident theatre companies as well in your venues, who, I mean, you just mentioned needed it for 5 or 6 weeks for the set, but then you also need to be bringing in other income. Do you spend a bit of your time negotiating, you two, with your own groups?
No, I think we're quite lucky that the main hirers for our theatre is they're quite stable, and we've had them for some time. So we've got four groups really that hire our theatre, and they have a plan for their upcoming year as well. And we're trying to, you know, negotiate between them and us a little bit to what are the dates that we need it and when can we have it. And there's a little bit of give and take, I think. You know, if it comes down to it, we will always make sure that we get the dates that we need to do, and also look at when other theatres have their shows on. I mean, there's a shared show calendar between Auckland theatres, and while we overlap quite a bit, we still try to not to when we can. But yeah, it's a bit of give and take, but I think mainly it's going to work. Yeah.
Andrew, do you do much negotiation? Or do people not dare ask?
I try not to do any negotiation. basically, it's very known, and that we're straight up, and we say this to all of our venue hires that are external. The venue is prioritized always to Auckland Music Theatre needs. And we disclaimer that in a variety of different ways. But basically, when we have our shows in there, we are saying, we need about 3 to 4 weeks beforehand to do the set. Auckland Music Theatre is a black box. There's no really, like, place to hide things. So luckily, a lot of the times the shows are platforms and things like that. There's not really a huge set element, which means that we have the versatility.
Yeah, you can go up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting because you were just saying, you know, it's a black box and you can't hide anything. I mean, we did any last year and we literally built a wall, right? Like 2 meters in from the back, which was where the band was behind it. And we built it and started building it. It was 3 quarters up before the C word happened. And, you know, then what we're going to do now? And we still had hires later in the year before we actually opened. And it was like, we're not going to bring that wall down, right? So the wall stayed, put a black curtain in front of it. And, you know, the hires just had to live with a slightly smaller space. I mean, thankfully, our stage is big enough, so it didn't really impact on them. But we said, look, we cannot put this thing down because it was huge and it was just too much. So again, yeah, you have to, you know, just get them and let them know what's happening, what's possible, what's not.
Thinking into your community theatre use, what would be the most, I suppose, exciting or bizarre use of the space, either by your company or an external hirer? The most exciting or bizarre?
Ooh, they're both thinking.
It was before my time, but 42 Below, the Vodka company, did a big, giant, like, release of a new brand for them. This probably was, like, 2011, and I believe it was sort of, like, alien-themed. And so there's still remnants of, like, signage and things around the building from it. But essentially, they used our workshop space and completely changed it. Like, when you walked in, you did not know it was a workshop. It was they masking everywhere, light, sound, like it was as if you were in a professional conference space. Then we've done things where people have gone in there and done simple things from putting a bunch of mannequins in and doing first aid training for other community groups and things. And sometimes they don't really tell us what they're doing, and I don't really prod too much, especially if they're entities I trust. One time I walked in, and all of a sudden there was 40 mannequins all over the place. I was like, what's going on? Anyways.
Yeah, nothing exciting here, really, to be honest. I think the most exciting is, and way before my time, we did Singing in the Rain at some stage, so we actually had rain on stage. So
cool.
How the heck we did that, I have no idea, but we apparently did it, so there you go. But nothing as exciting as what Andrew just said.
That segues nicely, though, the rain, into my next question, maintenance. How are you maintaining these buildings? We had the horrific weather yesterday and certainly a lot of leaks across Auckland. Have you got enough funds to maintain these buildings?
The short answer is no. You never have enough funds. I mean, we are building up certainly a bit of a, you know, fund for a rainy day, so to speak, and have managed that, thankfully, after COVID again with some big shows. But, yeah, we, and I just mentioned it before, we've got at least 2 leaks that I'm aware of that pop up every now and then, in particular with heavy rains. And while we try to get them fixed every now and then, it's an ongoing it's an ongoing challenge. And I think we're basically, as we speak, we're talking to our plumber again to say, hey, can you come in, have another look, what's happening above A1? And there's another one that we just found, just now actually, that our band music setup is probably under there where it might rain in, so we might have to move that fairly quickly, actually.
No. We don't want that.
But that's a real challenge, and I think it's similar to what Andrew said before. That's, you know, a building that was built in the 70s and the 90s, and, you know, in an ideal world, we would get the roof completely redone and maybe extend it, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
How do we protect these assets, Andrew, for the future? How do we make sure they're still here for the next 20, 30 years?
Yeah, absolutely. There is no right answer, but the best answer I can offer for that is that you have a vision and a plan of what you want the venue to be. And in 20 years, 10 years, 5 years, you know, sort of a strategic plan you would do for your own business, but having one for the building. Through that process, you know, naturally you have to have a maintenance plan. Make sure that you're finding the funds, whether it's your grant funds or capital in your accounts that you set aside to sort of do a project every little while. You know, with us, we have a couple of different entities, which is what we're trying to go through now in regards to Auckland Music Theatre, the society, as well as the trust, and trying to find ways of who's responsible for what and the maintenance and those type of things. So that's part of our process that we're going through at the moment. And, you know, having that vision to be able to go, hey, look, we have a plan. This is what we want to be. This is what the venue can be. This is the problems with it. We need $100,000 to completely reskin the outside of the facility. You know, let's do crowdfunding. Let's do one foundation grants. Let's do, you know, going to our wealthy neighbors and saying, you know, let's make this place a better place for your community.
Would you say a lot of the low-level stuff still depends on the goodness and the good hearts of your committee members and volunteers, like the little jobs?
Yeah, so I'd say one thing we found over the last couple of years, because I used to be on the committee, is that we could only rely on our volunteers for so much. And you have an extent of things that can be done. So cosmetic things, painting, wall, those type of things, you know, volunteers are fine for. When you have a leak above a power board, that's not something, yes, a volunteer could go in there and do an immediate fix. But the reality is we need to get a proper contractor in there to do it correctly, because you're dealing with power, you're dealing with health and safety, you're dealing with money, you're dealing with possibly the structure of the building. So those are all things that we've gotten to the point where a lot of the things that our venue needs at West Point, unfortunately, are big ticket items that need outside external professional help.
Yeah, 100%. I would totally agree with that, Andrew. And I think the same for us, really. I mean, there's so much you can do with volunteers, and you can do some planning, but the big ticket items, you have to either have the funds or you try to get some. I mean, we've been pretty lucky that the Howick Local Board has been supporting us quite a bit for, you know, a number of things, a few smaller renovations, getting new signage up and things like that. But, you know, again, that's smaller items, you know, like the $5,000, $10,000. But once you start trying to fix a roof for good or get a new roof up or an extension, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I think having a plan is a good idea, and you know, trying to see where you go from there, building up some savings for when you need them. But it has to be a long-term plan, I think. And we certainly have started quite a bit of a process and discussions with the local board as well, and getting them on board and, you know, show them what we want to do with the theatre.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a music break now and chat to these two lovely gentlemen a little later. After the break, we're going to talk with author Kerry Harrison about her new book, Hold the Line. For now, though, a little bit different. We're going to go instrumental for a change. It is the guitar tutor, Andrew Foy, who's very well known with his track, Save Your Tears. That's guitar tutor Andrew Foy with Save Your Tears. A little bit different on Kick Arts to play an instrumental, James, but it's Sunday night, the weather's a bit rainy, it's quite nice.
Keeping it fresh.
Keeping it fresh. Now, we are very lucky to have on the line the fabulous author Kerry Harrison to chat about the book Hold the Line, and the write-up says a compelling page-turning novel set during the Springbok tour of 1981, publishing on the 40th anniversary of that infamous winter. Welcome to the show, Kerry.
Hi.
Thanks for giving up your Sunday evening to have a chat to us.
That's no problem.
So tell us about the book and what's inspired you to write this.
Well, it's... I should start with the inspiration, really. I was a protester in 1981, and I really remember that time, you know, it was a very powerful 3 months in New Zealand. You know, everyone was kind of, the whole country came alive. It was very electric. Everyone was arguing. It could be quite violent at times. You know, it was almost like a police state. So, yeah, it's always stuck in my memory. And I wanted to kind of give make the voices come alive from that time, really. There were so many different opinions and so many different people.
And, Kerry, you refer to it as the whole country seemed to be at war. And it was a real standout time during that period. Can you tell us a bit about your brother's, Reese and Laurie's, role?
Well, my brother Laurie had gone to South Africa when he was quite a young man. He was a surfer and he had no real idea of what was going on in South Africa. It was in the early 70s and didn't really understand about apartheid. And he went to some amazing surf beach and then saw there was a shark net, and that coloureds and blacks were on one side of the shark net and whites on the other. And that was just, when he came home and told us that, it was just very powerful. I always remember it. I was a teenager, and it sort of informed his protesting. And so he was the protest leader of heart when the Springboks came to Gisborne, where he settled. So he got right in the thick of it at the very beginning. And my eldest brother, Reese, was also very active in the protest movement, and he defended the guy Mark Jones who flew the plane in the last test, as well as many protesters he represented as well.
And you, in your book, you take on the rugby culture of New Zealand at the time?
Yeah, I do, but I also give voice to it because my family were also quite passionate rugby lovers. Not myself necessarily, but my brothers were, and my father, and many of my friends. And so I didn't want to, you know, I myself was quite biased, I guess, but I could sort of see that somebody might come from a different position if they were passionate about something and was so looking forward to these great teams coming together. So, yeah.
So your book's called Hold the Line. Where does that title come from?
Well, it's really about the lines that were drawn on so many different fronts. You know, the police were holding their line, the protesters were holding theirs, people were holding their points of view, families were holding their, you know, the families were divided, there was divisions all the way through our society, so that's where it comes from. And also the two main protagonists are, you know, one is he's a Red Spot officer and she's a protester. And they fall in love, so there's a line there somewhere.
Now, it's interesting reading about it that you mentioned that the books had a long journey. It was a play worked on as a film and then a novel, often done in reverse order. So tell us about its journey and its other platforms as a play and being worked on as a film.
Yeah, well, it was originally a radio play commissioned by Radio New Zealand, and then that was a long time ago, 20-odd years ago, and then... there was a a move to make it into a film. So I worked with the children of Jeff Murphy, Robin Murphy, and Paul Murphy, and they were really interested in making it, building it into a script. And we almost made it to getting it made into a film. But Tom Scott also did a television movie Rage. That's right, Rage. And so he got the funding, and so that's when I decided to get the rights back and make it into a novel.
And it, obviously apartheid's a dominant theme. I'm a geography teacher during the day, and this week in class we were talking about hip-hop music and how hip-hop music has challenged apartheid. And one of the students in my class put up his hand and had said he never heard that word before. So we've got this, the generations are continuing to come through. What place do you see the Springbok Tour having in New Zealand's history even now?
Oh, really important, because we changed after that as a society, really. Before that, Gordon McLachlan, the great writer, sociologist, commentator, he saw us as being, he wrote a book called The Passionless People about New Zealanders, that we weren't, we were just ordinary, we were quite passive, but we're not, and we showed that we're not passionless. And after that, we had to really look at the way we viewed rugby, the whole culture around, surrounding it, its elevated status in our society, the way the police, behaved. They had to really review their own behaviour. I think it was a watershed time for us.
And for interested readers about to pick up your book, what do you hope they would experience or get from it?
Well, I hope really it's that they'll follow a narrative and a story most of all, because it's not a polemic. I wrote a love story, really, and so I wanted to get behind characters, no matter how distasteful we might think they are. I wanted to try and unpack them, and so I hope that they'll get really hooked on the narrative. I think it's got quite a good pace to it. I think there's some suspense there. And then I also hope they'll learn about a period of our history that was pretty powerful. Mm.
What are you working on next, Kerry?
Some short stories of a set in Auckland, in different parts of Auckland that connect.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll look forward to them. Well, we wish you every success with this special book on the 40th anniversary, Hold the Line. It's available now where all good books are sold. Thank you for chatting to us on a Sunday night, and good luck with the success of it.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Interesting comments there, James, what you're saying about your class.
Yeah, it sort of threw me because I, we talk about pre-teaching vocab. That's really important in a classroom. I didn't even think to pre-teach that word.
Yeah.
I thought apartheid was so ingrained. It threw me. And I really had to explain it carefully. And we talked about it. And, it was a good learning moment for me as well as them, I think.
Nice. Mm. Oh, it's good when students teach the teachers.
That's the best part.
Fantastic. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to get Belinda from Centre Stage to join Horst and Andrew in the conversations around community theatre. And now here, because Emma's not here, I'm allowed to play the Welsh of the West End again. I can only play this when she's not in the studio or I get in trouble. But I love their music. It was recorded on Zoom. Here is Seasons of Love from Rent.
Minutes, how do you measure a year in
Wonderful Welsh of the West End recording their music during COVID lockdowns all on Zoom. And if we were on television, you'd see Andrew dancing beautifully to that number throughout. One of his personal favourites, I believe, in the music theatre world.
He almost cheered as soon as he heard it was coming on.
I know.
He jumped out of the seat.
Excitement.
And he started singing to it as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely no comment.
Now, we are delighted to be joined now by Belinda from Centre Stage Theatre on the phone, who's going to join our conversations now around community venues. Good evening, Belinda.
Good evening. It's great to be here.
Welcome. We've got Horse here from Harlequin. We've got Andrew from AMT. And I should have said earlier that we were having Matt from Playhouse, but unfortunately he's quite unwell at the moment, so we're letting him rest up in bed and he better be listening. But we can say both Andrew and I have been in the Playhouse in the last few weeks with Sound of Music, so we experienced their hospitality and another good West Auckland venue available for hire. But heading up now to O'Riwa, tell us a little bit about Centre Stage.
Well, Centre Stage is quite an amazing space. We are lucky enough that the trust that first came up with the idea of having a community theatre in O'Riwa really grasped onto the idea of making it for the whole community. So we have three amazing spaces as part of our theatre. We have the rehearsal space at the back, the wonderful foyer at the front, and then the theatre in the middle. And we have lots of community groups that use our space, as well as our youth theatre and our adult theatre companies, and then schools from around the area. It's just an amazing thing to be part of.
And what's your role within Centre Stage?
I'm the current president of Centre Stage Theatre Company, which is a huge privilege. I've been part of the committee for a few years now. It's an amazing group of people. I think the thing I was most surprised at when I joined was just the huge variety of the people. You know, you go to a theatre company and you expect, oh, I'm going to meet other drama teachers, or I'm going to meet, you know, actors and so forth. But our committee is made up of, you know, accountants and nurses and people like that who are just really passionate about community theatre.
That's cool. Now, look, I asked the gentleman here what they found their biggest challenge, so I'm going to ask you, what's the biggest challenge, do you think, of running a community theatre today?
I think it's keeping relevant and keeping across what the whole of a very diverse community needs. You know, I think it's really easy to get quite tunnel visioned about what you would like to do in a theatre or what you would like to see coming out of the theatre, and it's the challenge to keep in touch with your community, to be giving them what the community needs and wants, as well as, like, you know, a little bit of challenge in there so you don't just become complacent. So yeah, I think it's just about finding your place in the community and giving something real and honest.
And how do you balance its use between community and its resident theatre group?
We came up with the rule, and as part of our constitution, we have only three adult shows a year and two youth shows a year, which leaves quite a big amount of time for community hire, other theatre companies to come in, including local schools, etc. And we also have community groups. We have a lovely group of ladies who come in and do patchwork. I'm just inspired by what they accomplish. And And then we also have workshops aimed at youth and adults alike. So there's a lot of opportunities there.
I'm going to ask all our guests now this question. And Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What do you think has been the biggest changes to community theatre that you've seen since your involvement? How's it changed?
Sure. Well, I've only been in New Zealand for 10 years, so I could only speak in the last decade or so. In that time, Auckland specifically, being that we have 13 musical societies, I believe it's 13 still, a concentrated area, we're struggling to, I hear this all over the country, but struggling to retain a membership. Volunteers that are not doing other shows. And we've gotten quite good, better at communicating with other societies that our shows don't overlap. But what that has done is allowed our members to then go to other places to do shows at other places.
So you're not getting that core group who, you know, would finish one show on stage and perhaps help off stage in the next, build the set for the next. And,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if I could, and, you know, in terms of Auckland Music Theatre, my time on the committee, we'd have people come in and do a show and we wouldn't see them for 3 years until they auditioned for another show that they wanted to do. Which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but when you're also trying to operate outside of a producing show perspective, and when you have a venue, when you're trying to do fundraisers and other things, you know, that's man hours, people hours that, you know, are required to make those happen, and it shouldn't always be just reliant on your 5 to 10 people on the committee.
Yeah. Horst, what about you? What do you think has been the biggest changes you've seen in community theatre?
Yeah, I think just the quality, really, of the performances and the deliveries. I mean, there's literally, you can go to pretty much every community theatre and you see a fantastic show and with brilliant staging and lighting and everything. I mean, the quality, I think, was always there, but it's just been, just got more and more and helped by some of the pro-am shows that we had. And you're almost expecting now to go to one of those community theatres, like, you know, I want to see a really good show.
I was going to say, do you think our expectations have got stronger too as an audience?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is probably tougher on community theatre.
It is, but I would agree with what Andrew said. You know, people on... We basically stopped, you know, including membership fees in our budget because... it's a smaller part of it anyway, but we have people, yes, they're a member and they need to be members for a show, but then they go to the next show and that's absolutely fine. I think there is a bit of a core there again. I mean, we started a youth comedy about a year and a half ago, and that's great to see bringing younger people in and being excited about having a space. I think the only other big changes, and maybe that's us and maybe we just all got a bit smarter. A few years ago, we always had drinks after rehearsals, in particular on a Sunday. That doesn't seem to happen anymore so much. Whether that's because we're also busy with other things. But I do remember, you know, certainly for the first 10, 15 years when I did shows, every Sunday we had at least a drink or two before we went home. That doesn't seem to happen so much anymore. I'm not quite sure why.
Yes, and is that the culture of changing around sort of the whole drink driving, or is it that we're actually so busy we're racing to the next thing in our world? I mean, you think of my day today. I mean, this is the fourth thing for me in a day.
Yeah, probably both, right? Yeah. And I think, it doesn't mean you have to drink alcohol, right, when you stay. It's just mingling.
But that getting to know everybody, building that sense of community.
But I think we just all have busy lives. Yeah. We're just like, oh, let's go home.
And I see that being a proximity to the city thing. I would be great to hear what Belinda says about Arua and Centre Stage. But I know my wife's family is very involved with Papakura Theatre Company. And they're very, very family sort of community oriented. They have their pocket. And it's for historically the 10 years I've been involved. It's the same 20 people that are managing it, that are working together. And for them, it is a social thing. You know, it's not about the shows per se. I mean, that's ultimately the thing they output to the community. But it's a social club for them. At the heart, that is what makes it fun for them. And I think a lot of the other societies, we're finding ourselves constantly trying to remind ourselves why we're doing it. Yeah. Because it is so energy draining and that type of thing, and so just trying to find that balance of trying to make it a little bit more social in the closer city societies, I think, is something we should look into.
Belinda, what about you up in O'Riwa? What have you seen as some of the biggest changes in your community theatre space?
I think that the busyness of everybody who's involved, you know, our lives are so much busier. Like you said, this fourth thing you've done today, you know, probably like the other people there, I've been at the theatre all day, and we've had three different things on in the theatre today. And our volunteers' lives are so busy, so it is about trying to widen the circle of people that you use, because otherwise you're burning through volunteers, or you're not getting that variety of opinions and ideas because it's too narrow. So that's what I've seen, is just a wider and wider variety of people who are getting involved, which is fantastic. And we are up north, but funnily enough, you mentioned Papakura Theatre Company. We're borrowing some of their set for, you know, one of our upcoming shows. That's awesome. The sense of community and what we do is fantastic. And, yeah, so that's the biggest change for me, is just how many people you need to call on, because we're just so much busier.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that. I mean, we're doing Adam's Family at the moment, and Manukau Performing Arts have given us their set and things to use. And not only that, but said, now we'll come and help you put it up because we know how it all works. It's like, how cool is that, that actually their own people are going to come out west and make that happen. And Belinda, how important do you think show choice is? You know, it's... Do we have to keep doing these name shows to get the audience in? What's your thoughts?
It's a fine balance, isn't it? You know, O'Riwa has a slightly older demographic, but we also obviously have a lot of young people. I think it is bringing in those shows that people know, but then we're really lucky that we've got a small, you know, our rehearsal space can also be used as a performance space. And what we've had recently is directors who have said, can I put a show on out the back that's a little bit different and it hasn't got that name, but it draws in a different audience. And I think it is that fine balance of trying to connect with your existing audience and building a new base as well.
Yeah, it's.
I think there's some shows we potentially shouldn't be doing anymore as times change. but it's amazing how interested the young people are in older shows like Guys and Dolls, for example, or you know, shows like that.
Yeah, well, I had that conversation with a couple of school principals this week, and I said, if you take them all out, though, they're also a piece of history. And, you know, we teach history, we teach geography, and there's a musical theatre history as well.
Absolutely. And they enjoy the costumes and the spectacle of it all more than I thought they would. I teach teenagers every day. I'm a drama teacher at Westlake Girls, and I'm always amazed by how fascinated they are with older shows. Of course, they're obsessed with Hamilton, but they love the spectacle and you know, the size of casts of shows like 42nd Street and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those old ones are practical for school shows because you can have the larger numbers in them.
Yes.
Andrew, what about your thoughts? You know, how important is getting that show choice right for community theatre versus, say, the professional or the pro-am?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a hot topic always for every community theatre group or any professional group as well, in terms of matching the commercial value versus the art form, if you will, or people's personal passions for certain shows. You know, you got to find that balance. I mean, there's a time and a place for Mamma Mia's. That, you know, will always do well. There's a reason why Auckland Music Theatre has done it twice in the last decade as well. At the same time, you know, if you can put in the little more fringy items as well, if you don't put those shows on and get them out into your communities, nobody's going to know them. You know, you're always going to get the main popular ones. So if you could balance out a curated season that's got, you know, one or two big name shows a year that can offset the ones that may be a higher risk, then that's, you know, that's the ultimate dream, I think, for a lot of people, because, you know, not everybody wants to do Greece every year.
There's a connection there, though, because we were just talking before about how audiences' expectations of community theatre has increased because the quality's increased. So surely if our community theatre is strong with well-known productions, then audiences will take the risk to go to maybe unknown shows because the quality's there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, not every show for Auckland Music Theatre is amazing, but at the end of the day, you know, we know there's people in our community that come because they've come to shows that are consistently of good, high value. You know, for the money you pay, they're getting professional, you know, grade productions sometimes. So, you know, they're willing to come out and give new things a shot. And that goes back into what we were saying earlier as well about, you know, getting our reach outside of just what our membership is and the people that constantly come to us. You know, we have roles as venues to engage the greater community that may not be musical theatre fans or know they are fans.
So what have you got coming up at Centre Stage? Belinda, what's the rest of your year looking like?
We're just finishing our musical review of BG's music called Words. We've then got our junior show, which is a Kids at the Movie show. Following that will be the play, Streetcar Named Desire. And then our big show to end the year is Les Miserables, which we were just so impressed. I think we're really lucky at this time. We've got actors who have come back to New Zealand to get away from COVID centres. We had over 100 people auditioned for Les Miserables, and that's just so wonderful to have these actors here and to have them working alongside our members that have been part of shows in the past. So we're very excited for that production, of course. And, you know, Streetcar Named Desire is a movie that I watched as a kid, well, not too young, and very excited to see that on the stage.
Yeah, that's been a big thing too, the amount of actors, whether professional or not, that have returned to New Zealand and are now doing these circuits. Are you all finding that in your situation as well, getting more people to auditions?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. We had, I think, over 70 or 80 people auditioning for Mamma Mia, which is our end-of-the-year show. And, yeah, it's a lot of people who have been going to Europe doing, you know, stuff in the arts or some other stuff, or going for their ways and coming back. And I mean, certainly a few, I think all theatres profit of that. Yeah, so definitely, for sure.
We talk about COVID, and I think probably, you know, the other aspect of community theatre is the mental health side. It is a good space to be in. It's a positive environment. It's doing something you love, and there's all that goodness around community theatre, any theatre, in these times when many of the world still aren't.
I think Andrew made a really good point before, you know, with you know, the pressure that we sometimes put on ourselves as you know, as part of the committee, or when we run shows and we want to do the best we can and build up funds and stuff like that, we tend to forget why we're doing this to some extent. I mean, we really want to be successful, but at the same time, we need to remind ourselves we do it because we love it, right? And we want to give a platform for people, and whether that's people on stage or off stage or the audience. And every time you do a great show and you have the audience feedback and they're coming out and say, you know, they're buzzing, then you know why you put all that effort in. But at the same time, I think a little less stress on ourselves might make it a little bit easier. Sometimes maybe good is good enough. We shouldn't try to be awesome.
Yeah, true. All right, Belinda, we're going to let you enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening. If people want to track down Centre Stage Theatre, where can they find you on the internet?
We're on Facebook and Instagram, and of course our website, Centre Stage Theatre. Just type that in and you'll find us. It's been so good talking to you and hearing from other theatre companies how you guys are all doing.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, and all the best with your upcoming seasons.
Thank you.
Cool.
Good night.
Thank you. We're going to take a music break and then catch up with Emma, who is live at the Harlequin Theatre, where Horst has escaped the evening. We're going to play a song now, which is called Far Too Late. It's from Andrew Lloyd Webber's brand new musical Cinderella, due to open in the West End this month. Andrew himself is playing the piano. And it's interesting, if you've been following West End, they were going to open, stopped, went back into lockdown. looked like it was going to open, and he opened all his theatres again, and I see he's written to the government this week because they've asked him to restrict the numbers quite dramatically, or preferably close and reopen mid-July. He's made the call to open all his shows next week at restricted numbers and take the loss rather than put his whole production teams off again for the third time in a row.
Wow.
It's pretty tough.
That's huge.
Yeah, some brilliant letters. If you follow him on Facebook and read his letters to the government, it's really quite interesting getting a producer's take on the West End. But he wants this to open, so here is Far Too Late from his new musical, Cinderella.
Far too late to sing a love song, now that midnight's come and gone. There's no happy ever after. I ran away, too ashamed to ever face you. I have shattered all my dreams. Time for tears instead of laughter. Someone else's arms. Far too late for second guessing. My chance is gone. Far too willful to forget you. Though I have to let you go, there's no point in my obsessing. To sing a love song. Far too late to sing a love song. You're in someone else's arms. To sing a love song, you're in someone else's arms.
Far Too Late from Andrew Lloyd Webber's new musical Cinderella, and I do suggest follow him on Facebook and just have a listen to his conversations with government over COVID and starting back up again. It is interesting. It's worth a look. We're going to touch base now all the way out to Harlequin.
I wish
you wish to have the curse reversed.
Will the baker and his wife find what they need before the last midnight? Will Cinderella marry her prince and live happily ever after? What awaits Jack at the top of that beanstalk? And what will Little Red find at her grandmother's house? Find out all this and more at Into the Woods at Harlequin Musical Theatre, June 26th to July 10th. Tickets at itickets.co.nz.
Well, Emma, how are you this evening?
Thank you, Stephen.
You've had a big, was it a technical or a dress today?
It was a technical rehearsal today.
And how's that gone?
Technicals are always interesting, always hard work when we pull everything together.
It is. It's always one of those stressful days, but so important.
Especially in a show like Into the Woods, which is so technically heavy.
Yeah, tell us about that. You've got giant trees,
yeah. We've got witches and transformations and cows that die and come back to life, all sorts of things.
Cows that die that come back to life. And we've taken your man from the theatre tonight to come and chat to us about community theatre. And I guess I'm curious, as someone who is so actively involved in theatre and involved with theatres up and down the country, what's your sort of take on community theatre 2021? You know, what are some of the changes you've seen in the last few years?
So I think one of the biggest changes this year has actually been the uptake in the audience. Like, on the whole, there's been a lot of really good reports. Shows are selling well. So whether or not that's people going, let's see it while we can, because maybe we don't know when we won't be able to again, I'm not sure.
Right, interesting. And Andrew was talking earlier off here just about how sort of out of Auckland in particular has been selling out really well. Do you think in Auckland that nervousness is still around getting the refunds and you know, the ever-changing COVID world?
I think there's definitely a difference in regards to Auckland has always had a bit of a reputation for being late-minute buyers, and I don't think that has changed.
Right.
Shows on the whole seem to be doing quite well, but maybe not. But then, having said that, Gorda Theatre Company sold out about a month before they were due to open. So, you know, it will come to the show as well.
Yeah.
And a really big change, I reckon, that has happened is people having time to volunteer. So community theatres rely on volunteers. And I think on the whole, people are generally just really busy. And post-COVID, I also think a lot of people have realised the importance of being home and personal well-being.
Mm.
So volunteering isn't the number one priority anymore.
How important do you think that show choice is? Something we've asked all our guests tonight. You know,
it's huge.
It has to be, we still have to have that balance, don't we, of the well-known but also attempting some new work from time to time.
Well, I think the joy of the well-known is well-known you'd like to think is your bums on seats because people know what it is. The marketing is generally easier because people know the songs, they know the story. That gives you then a little bit of extra revenue to take the risk to do something new that people don't know.
Yeah, true. So tell us about Into the Woods. It opens this week?
It opens next Saturday, yes, and runs for 2 weeks. And amazing cast out here. I mean, it's quite a small, it's a small cast in the sense that there's 21 of them, but, there's no one hidden in this. There's no ensemble that's 20 people where you can kind of have a great time. Everyone's got a pretty particular role they play and they're integral to the story. Really nice to have a range of ages in the show. You know, we've got young ones, right? Well, when I say young, I think our youngest would be 10, through to our oldest would be nearly 70.
That's cool. Now, as somebody who produces theatre and involved in drama all over the place, what's it like coming into a community theatre setting where, I mean, it's not you hiring the space, you've stepped into their world. What's that like coming back into that community theatre space?
I suppose I'm lucky with Harlequin because I'm a part of the space on a weekly basis because I do hire their space once a week to teach my lessons anyway. And the show was meant to be mounted last year. When it was postponed due to COVID, I offered to put on a review fundraiser type show for them. And I've actually done two other shows in the past with Harlequin. So I know most of the people here, know the way they work, so I'm kind of lucky from that point of view of not an outsider coming into a new space, which is great.
Hey Bish, I was checking out the Instagram this morning and you've done a bit of a day in the life of. You were out early this morning trying to find costumes for the wolf at Look Sharp. Did you have any luck?
I didn't find anything, but the funny thing was I got here and my amazing costume, one of my lovely costume people, Louise, had made some wolf ears out of the leftover fabric she'd made the costume in. So a good thing that I didn't find what I wanted at Look Sharp or David's Emporium, which was good. But, you know, it's the life of a director, I think. As much as there's people looking after all the areas, you still kind of get little bits and pieces. So I've taken on the task of creating the wolf's mask. So that was what the ears were for.
Nice. Well done. Teamwork.
The wolf looks really scary, and I think he gets pink hair at some stage.
Oh, are you giving away trade secrets now, Horst?
I don't know.
A pink-haired wolf, Emma.
Agony. It would be quite fun. Quite fun to have pink hair, but I did try the wolf ears on today and they didn't quite look right with my hair.
Fair enough. Now, next week you'll be back in your chair that James is keeping warm for you this week, and next week we've got a very special competition that we're going to launch.
So it's very exciting.
It is a $3,500 prize up for grabs. We're going to talk to you all about it next week, but all I can say is if you like writing music, you need to tune in to next Sunday's show.
And if you want to win a prize which reflects your own music and gets you to develop something that maybe you haven't been able to afford to do with some professional handiwork alongside you, definitely tune in.
Definitely. And Emma's worked so hard on our wonderful new website at kickarts.org.nz. So make sure you are sending in your bulletins to us and looking at advertising with us so that you continue to support Kick Arts, but we can also support you. So community theatre groups, make sure you're sending in all your details to info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, Emma, can you relax now, head home, put your feet up?
I am going home. I don't know if I'll relax. I think, like any director at this stage, I'll be going home to create some lists ahead of our tech dress tomorrow night. And which is nice.
Brilliant. All right. Well, you take care. I can't wait to see the show. And good luck with the season opening this week.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Horst, for being there. And to Andrew and everyone for King Community Theatre tonight.
Absolutely. Rocking community theatre. Lots of rocking tonight.
Thanks so much.
Fabulous.
Brilliant. Take care,
thanks,
mate.
Everybody.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
And James, a few things that's come into our inbox this week. TAPAC are very excited to announce the appointment of their new theatre producer and performer, Sarah Somerville, as their new executive director, I should say. She was co-founder of the children's company theatre Phineas Fogg Productions. Sarah wrote, directed and produced more than 60 children's theatre shows and led 8 national tours. For the past 5 years, she's worked as the public programs manager at MOTAT, where she was responsible for creating and engaging their yearly program of events and experience. Studying at Trinity College in London, they are delighted to have her as the new executive director as they farewell Sally Ann Kerr. So congratulations on that. And Flying Nun are delighted to announce their Wellington 40th anniversary show, Saturday the 7th of August at Michael Fowler Centre. All the wonderful groups that have been part of the Flying Nun music scene are coming together for this very special concert. So tickets are available from Ticketmaster, where you can find all the details out about this event. And Q Theatre have Karanga, and this is in season perhaps her most spectacular work to date. Choreographer Marina Gray is taking on the complexities of intergenerational relationships and the art of Karanga and the escalation of climate change in her new multidisciplinary work. It's funded by Creative New Zealand. It's one night only at Q Theatre on Thursday the 5th of August. So head to Q Theatre to find out all the details on that. You can send us your bulletins for us to read to info@kickarts.org.nz. We'll get it up on our website. You'll see a number of things starting to arise on there on our new site. Now, for the final part of the show, I'm going to quiz Andrew and Horse. A little outside of community theatre now, I'm curious to find out what their favourite piece of theatre is that they've ever worked on before and why. So, Horst, I'm going to start with you. Your favourite piece of theatre you've worked on before and why? No pressure.
So when you say worked on as
yeah, something you've been in some way. You might not have been on stage, you may have produced it backstage, raised a hammer, but whatever it was something that is etched in your memory.
Yeah, probably one of my favourites would have been Phantom of the Opera in Sydney.
Oh, cool.
And I wasn't in it because I actually don't like it that much. But I was working backstage and that was really cool. And we had a fantastic crew back in out in Chatswood at the Concourse. It's about 600. Huge theatre. It's absolutely brilliant. We all had our comms on. And I will never forget how a stage manager always said, okay, and we go in, go, go, go. It's like, okay, which go? I mean, the first one or the second or the third one? But it was a fantastic show. It was huge. It was like our pro-am shows, really, and it was fantastic. So I really loved that.
I've never had somebody say their favourite show is something in the second sentences, but I wasn't in it because I don't really like it. So it was the experience more than the show itself.
And I think, I mean, it's a great show, right? It was actually, Phantom was the very first show I've ever seen, like 100 years ago. And really, from an audience point of view, I think I like it and I love being backstage, but I wouldn't want to be in it. If that makes sense.
Did you do a bit of theatre in Sydney?
Yeah, we did. We managed quite a bit of with a company called Willoughby Theatre Company over there, and they do, you know, quite big shows at the Concourse. So I did Les Miserables and Sunset Boulevard both as ensemble, which was great.
I love Sunset Boulevard.
Great
done
show.
Well.
Absolutely.
Done well.
Yeah.
It has to be done
brilliant
well.
Show.
Yeah, it needs that big set. Yeah, I can remember being sort of in my early 20s and just amazed at this incredible house that just appeared in what felt like a second.
Yeah. we had this incredible set builder. He was a professional set builder, and we had this massive house that turned around and everything. It was just incredible.
Such a good one. Cool. Andrew, favourite or most memorable?
Yeah, it probably actually would be the first production I saw at my undergrad university, the California Institute of the Arts. It was a musical self-written by the dean of the school at the time called Book of Tink, which was essentially a combination of Peter Pan with the Book of Revelations.
Wow.
And basically, like, really flipped things on its head. You know, Peter Pan sort of going into this sort of fantasy world where mermaids were prostitutes. And it was very avant-garde and sort of like presented in an opera format. So everything was bigger than life and just beautiful at the same time. I remember that was probably the first time that I went to a theater show that wasn't just tap dancing and glitter and sparkles, and it was taking the art form and saying that you can do sort of avant-garde fringe work. And that's something I've carried with me when I direct. You know, I don't like to do things that people have done before, so I always try to find a way to flip things on its head. you know, push boundaries. You know, I make a lot of enemies on the way, but at the end of the day, you know, like that's what theater's about, is building experiences that are unique and memorable. And for me, yeah, the Book of Tink was that. Also, there's a show that is making its way around New Zealand in the professional circuit. It's from Australian writer Andrew Bovell. It's called The Things I Know to Be True, which is a play. It currently just did a season at Circa, which sold out way in advance. I saw it in Sydney at Belvoir Street Theatre. It is absolutely beautiful. It is a family drama. It hits you at the core. It's one of those ones that there wasn't a single person that wasn't laughing or crying. And you get completely immersed in everyday troubles, but presented in a beautiful way.
Nice. Is theatre different back home to here? Do you notice an obvious difference?
Yes, money.
Really?
Everything over there, naturally, there's levels, there's layers. But from a commercial standpoint, and I'll speak specifically about musical theatre since that's been the hot topic tonight, is musical theatre is in this weird transition right now where it's been a community theatre-based arts practice. Mm. And the reality is in Australia and America, Canada, Europe, that it's not recognized as an amateur art form. It is also a professional art form.
Right.
And there's very clear career paths for people to take. And now that we're getting some progression with that, with like G&T Productions just doing Jersey Boys, being one of the first completely Kiwi-produced, fully professional productions, we're starting to have an opportunity to see pathways for people that want to do musical theater as a profession, not just for fun. And I think we have this balance because there's a stigma in the professional arts world, being because I bridged the two, that musical theater is not a quality theater experience, which I completely disagree with.
How do we change that perception then?
Well, we have to. This is one of the things I was going to bring up earlier, is talking about things that have changed and things that over the last decade or so. One thing that hasn't changed is ticket prices.
Mm.
Ticket prices are still $15 to $30.
Yeah.
But
and we wonder why we're running under budget, over budget.
In our club rooms, when we have 100 seats, 150 seats, you're not going to ever make a huge amount of money on a show consistently through a year. And I think there needs to, as part of that experience, we need to find a way to be consistent in our delivery in terms of amount of output work we put in, consistent in the quality of it as much as possible, but at the same time giving opportunities for learnings and people to develop. And then, of course, bring the art form to the industry. And if we're able to work with, it doesn't have to be at civic scale, but if we're able to get our societies to start saying, hey, let's do a Songs for a New World, there's four or five performers, let's try doing a paid production and giving people those opportunities. And I think you will find that if we do have those paid opportunities, everything is going to become a little bit more structured.
Yeah.
Everything is going to become a little bit more elevated in terms of quality. And then the communities will also rally around that and say, look what we're doing. We're not only giving opportunities for people to be social musical theater education experiences, but we're also giving them a way to make some side money. And that will in turn create patronage, people wanting to donate to the groups. It's a big project.
100%.
It's something that I'm definitely passionate about moving forward.
All right, we are out of time. How can people get in touch with you, Andrew, at Auckland Music Theatre if they want to find out what's on or hire your space?
Yep, absolutely. I believe Auckland Music Theatre has just released their new website, which will be something like aucklandmusictheatre.org.nz. You could also reach me personally at venuehire@auckandmusictheatre.com. www.ourhearts.org.nz. We also have, of course, the socials, Instagram, Facebook, and you could contact me at any time.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Horst, how can we get a hold of Harlequin?
Yeah, Harlequin, again, is on the socials, of course, Harlequin Musical Theatre. We're on Facebook and Instagram. And our website is harlequintheatre.co.nz. Any questions, send us an email on info@harlequintheatre.co.nz. And, yeah, we're open Into the Woods in less than a week's time.
Check it out. Check it out on iTicket.
Check it out on iTicket. Yes, Andrew's going to be happy about that.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your time, for your commitment to community theatre and giving up a busy Sunday evening to squeeze us into your life. I really appreciate it and appreciate what you're doing for the arts.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, James, for filling in Emma's seat tonight.
Always a pleasure.
Next week, we have James Hunter in studio launching his latest song. We have singer Daniel Armstrong joining us as well, and the cast of That Bloody Woman that we've talked about tonight are here next week. We're also chatting to an author of an outstanding children's book, so don't miss that episode. And check us out at kickarts.org.nz. Here's James Hunter to take us out. Good night.
Oh, wait, you don't. I'm so over you. Nope. When I think of you, I choke on the lump in my throat. That's when my friend comes through. He helps me to cope.
She was ashamed of you. You can see it in her eyes. You never satisfied her like the love of other guys.
You see, sometimes my friend doesn't always get it right. He gives it his best shot, but he overthinks a tad too much. I've broken your trust in me. Sorry, my bad. Still, you're resenting me. I hate when you're mad.
Your existence is dead to him. He couldn't give a damn.
Then again, I'll admit, this doesn't feel right. You see, 'cause my mom and dad don't want my life to end. Maybe it's my friend. He's a wolf amongst sheep.
I was just joking and stitched it.